But in a solitary life, there are rare moments when another soul dips near yours, as stars once a year brush the earth. Such a constellation was he to me.
Welcome to the Busy Girls Book Club. We're back to bring you another super popular book from Book Social Media and tell you whether it's worth your time if you are a busy young professional like we are. I'm Caitlin.
I'm Casey.
And I'm Catherine. So this week we are tackling a very popular book by a very popular author, because she has two very popular books. It's Circe by Madeline Miller, but you may recognize her from A Song of Achilles. She also wrote that book, and they kind of coincide because they tackle a very similar time period. So Circe,
they actually cross over.
Oh yeah, for sure. But Circe is tackling the perspective of a sea nymph in the story of the Iliad and the Odyssey. Odysseus's journey home, he meets this sea nymph named Circe on this lonely island. It's just her. And he stays there for, I believe, 7 years in the Odyssey. Don't quote me on that, because I freaking hated that book when I had to read it in seventh grade. So I am shocked that I liked this book. But yeah, so it's basically her life as in like a 1,000-year time span. It goes through very many generations, and from the perspective of a woman in this time period, when a lot of the authors, all of the authors, were men that we read from this time period, and it's from the male gaze and the male perspective. So taking a complete turn on the Greek myths and the Odyssey and the Iliad from the perspective of a powerful sea nymph on a lonely island.
If you read Percy Jackson and the Sea of Monsters, she's the one that turns men into guinea pigs.
So we love her.
So you got Catherine's sophisticated definition and then Caitlin's dumb version.
Wow. It's a real turn of events here.
Oh, ouch. Okay, well, I'm going to read my review, okay? Well, first of all, I found this one that I thought Catherine wrote. It's a really short one, so I'm going to give you this one first. It says, I'm just a sucker for mythology retellings. Oh, yeah, give me more, baby. That's not my real review, though.
That's exactly how I feel, to be honest. I
That's how I feel, too. I am a sucker for mythology.
This one is a 5-star review on Storygraph, Sarah H.M.'s review. This book is an experience that can never be understood by anyone but women. Its complexity and simplicity of wanting to be alive, wanting to change and see all that you can be, is so feminine in its nature. Circe's journey with exile, witchcraft, child-rearing, Telegonus and Telemachus later on, that with Hermes, Odysseus, Daedalus too, this book is an experience that should only be consumed by women.
Period.
Yes. Preach. That is so good. I love it. If you're a male listener, I encourage you to still read it, but this book is the female experience. It is the female experience brought to life.
It is the female gaze for once in a goddamn time.
Yeah.
And it is the female experience, like puberty through like late matronhood.
Yeah.
Child rearing and growing old.
Okay, well, now to sound like a total dumbass, I just have one review. It's a 1-star review, and it's from Benjamin Ferguson, who says, my English teacher is making me read it.
Casey's mom, are you making him read this?
Shout out, Benjamin.
Shout out to that English teacher.
Yeah, like, shout out to the English teacher. Shout holy shit.
Screw the Odyssey. Yeah, let's read Circe.
Yes. Oh my gosh.
Honestly. So that let's is replace so the Odyssey with this. Let's start a change.org petition.
Yeah. So everyone has to read Know My Name and Circe in school to get their women's
busy girls degree.
Yeah. Their busy girls degree. Yes. So yeah, sorry to follow up Caitlin's beautiful review with that garbage, but
Catherine already called me dumb, so.
No, I called me dumb. Because I said it's quite a role reversal, because you said something dumb after I said something eloquent. It's a role reversal.
Oh, I thought you were insinuating that was the normal.
No, other way around. Role reversal.
Okay, I guess I'll forgive you.
How fortunate.
I was wondering why you were so offended. I was like, I was making fun of myself. Anyway.
Y'all, it's past my bedtime.
Past, well, it's only 7:30 here, so it's not past my bedtime. But
it's 10:30 here.
All right, Catherine's review, go.
Okay, so my review is also 1 star. It's from Goodreads, and it's also written by a man, so maybe that's a similar theme here. It's by Peter. He gave it 1 star. My daughter loaned me her copy, which was fortunate, as this is the most poorly written, with no respect for the source material, slow, dull twaddle. I'm sure this is surely a case of judging a book by its cover syndrome.
The entire point is taking lesser mythology characters and giving them a voice. It's not meant to be literal.
Yeah, there's no source material.
Exactly. So I thought this was so interesting because when I was searching through the 1-star reviews on Goodreads, a lot of the 1-star reviews were from like master's degree students in mythology or in like studying the Iliad and the Odyssey. And they were very offended that it diverted from the source material. But that's the whole point, is that it's giving it a perspective of a fake thing. It's a mythology. It's myth for a reason.
I love Greek mythology. I love reading stories that play on it and reading, like, I've read the Odyssey and stuff. I think having a, like, hobby love for the Greek mythology gives you a really good starting point to, like, deeper understand this book. I guess if you're a master's student, yeah, you have no fun with mythology, but like, I think if you just generally like Greek mythology and know a lot of the stories, this book is super fun.
This man sounds like a devil's advocate and I don't like him. The whole purpose of the book is to give life to a perspective that was not valued at the time. And that's why it is not the quote unquote source material. So
yeah. Also the source material is just some random dude poet that wrote a book about Greek myths. Like,
yeah, the book is also not fact. It's
like, it's not the Bible and, or anything like it.
Song of Achilles is her other book that's really popular now. It's the same concept. It's not about Achilles, it's about his like partner in crime, and yeah, it's the Trojan War, but like no one gives a crap. It's a love story. It's awesome.
Okay, so most people disagreed with these haters. The overall Goodreads review is 4.2 out of 5. The Amazon review is 4.6 out of 5. How do y'all's reviews compare?
That is too low. It should be 5 out of 5. It is a great book. I mean, yes, it's slow in parts. Don't get me wrong. But it is such a unique perspective and it is nothing like I've ever read.
I gave it a 4. There's really nothing wrong with it. It just wasn't like my favorite book ever. And I think I read this after I read Song of Achilles, and I liked Song of Achilles slightly more, so I kind of compared them on accident. But still a really good book. It is a little slow at points, and Circe at the beginning is kind of annoying, but like as a character. But overall, like no complaints really that would make me not recommend it.
Yeah, I'm going to come down in the middle out of 4.5 out of 5. I really loved it. I mean, the whole point of the book is character development, and Circe changes and learns so much. Like, she is a totally different person or totally different nymph by the end than she was at the beginning. But it happens in all the best ways. And this book just really makes you feel so many things. Like, you're on this journey that spans like 1,000 years with her, and so you feel like she's like your friend by the end. Like, you just really feel for her. But there were parts that were really slow, and she is extremely obnoxious in the beginning, so it didn't quite hit 5 out of 5, but it was almost there.
But isn't everyone as a child and a teenager, aren't we all obnoxious?
She's just like especially whiny.
It was also, I like mythology, but I definitely know less about it than you two. And there were points where I was like having to Google stuff. If you are interested in mythology, I definitely recommend it. But if you don't know a ton, just kind of be prepared that you might have to look up some of the context.
Right. This covers thousands of years and tons of myths. So, but I think that's why it's cool. It kind of brings it all into a timeline and it's very interesting. You kind of jumped our first question, more plot or character driven?
Character. I mean, there's one plot point that's sort of out of Cersei's control. Everything else is character.
Yeah. I mean, the book is called Cersei, character driven.
All right. Well, I don't need to add anything to that.
Yeah. Well, our second question we've also already kind of touched on. Have you read any other books by the author? I haven't, though Song of Achilles has been on my list for forever.
I am 22% of the way into Song of Achilles, and I like it, but not as much as Cersei so far.
So I'm the only one who's read it. Okay. I picked it up really not knowing what the heck I wanted. I just picked it up because it was popular at the time, and I really loved it. I was surprised by it, Song of Achilles. And then you guys, I think, are the ones who picked up Cersei, and we all like swapped books and read it when we all lived in the same area and used each other's libraries. So I was really excited to have the opportunity to read another Madeline Miller book, and I hope there are many more to come.
Retweet. So how was the pacing of the book for you guys?
I think it took me about 3 days. It was a pretty normal book pacing. I don't remember it being exceptionally slow or exceptionally fast.
Yeah, I think it was pretty average. Like we mentioned, there were a couple of slow spots, but nothing that made me want to put it down and take like a long break from it. Like it was a well-paced, like average pace.
Well, I guess only two hosts will ever need to talk because I have the same things to say. I think it took me 4 or 5 days to read. Some parts were slow, but yeah, nothing that really put me off.
All right. Catherine heard a rumor that they're making an HBO Max 8-episode miniseries about Cersei.
Okay, so I did some deep diving into this because I couldn't figure it out. Because it said that it was supposed to come out in 2021. And I'm like, It is 2023. I'm guessing COVID or just production was put on halt. But they say there's still, HBO Max still owns the rights to it. And Madeline Miller has said that she's super excited to be working with them to make this come about. So I think there is going to be a TV miniseries on HBO Max, which I'm very fortunate to have through my parents.
I would love to watch a miniseries on this book. I also think HBO is a great production company for this. It just feels like the right pairing, the right fit, and I would love to watch it.
I think miniseries is the best option for sure. Mm-hmm. Movie, that would be a lot to squeeze in, but it doesn't need to be like a recurring series because I think you could easily break down this book into like 8 different periods of her life. Yes. I also have HBO Max, courtesy of my brother-in-law. Thank you, Jacob. So I will be tuning in if it ever airs.
Yeah, I think it's just, it has a very distinct beginning and a very distinct ending. There's no like ambiguity of it. So you can't really add seasons. So I think it's perfectly at the length of like an 8 episodes like that an HBO does for like a Game of Thrones and stuff like that. Perfect place to put it.
Well, since it does have a like root in Greek mythology, you're not just going to invent new Greek myths. That's like, I don't know. No one does that. Don't do that.
Yeah, then the haters will really be out. It's really strong.
Well, they're already that master out. Student. He's gonna get you.
It was like 2 or 3 master students in the comment section. I'm like, y'all have too much free time to be writing these essays about this book.
Well, whatever. The dude whose review you read, Catherine, he will not be watching.
No. All right. Well, I think we're at our busy girl rating. What do you guys give it?
I mean, if I gave it a 5, I got to give it a 5. Like it's a it's a quick read. And I think it's perfect for a busy girl to read about a feminist icon that you never knew existed and probably never existed because this is a myth.
If you're a grown up Percy Jackson kid, this is a 5. If you don't like Greek mythology or like women, I don't know.
For women. How about just die, first of all?
Whoa.
If you don't like women.
We're already. Oh.
This We're is a fever dream. Yeah. Okay. I'm going to give it a 4 out of 5. I really liked it. I think it's a great read, but I wouldn't necessarily say it's a quick read or an easy read. You definitely need to be focused while you're reading it. So if you're just looking for like book candy to blow through in one weekend, I'm not sure this is it. It's really a book I feel like you have to savor and think about. So I'm going to give it a 4 out of 5.
But maybe I'm crazy and think that like I can savor and think about a book in just a weekend.
Like I remember when I was reading it, I would stop and I would just need a second to be like, wow, that just happened. Or wow, this girl is just on this journey. I mean, the journey is just so fantastic. I know. And the writing is very slow. It has a sort of cadence to it. Like the book's not slow, but I feel like the author really takes her time in sort of telling every part of the story.
Island vibes for sure.
Yeah, very isolated island. So yeah, 4 out of 5.
Okay, well, do we want to get to the spoiler alerts? I mean, not too many spoiler alerts if you know anything about Greek mythology.
There are some differences though.
So the main surprise has come from Circe herself.
This book, as we've, you know, kind of already said, is a retelling of the Greek myth of the Odyssey from the perspective of Circe, who's a nymph, who has like a very, very small part in the original Odyssey. What did you guys think of sort of taking that idea and retelling it from Circe's perspective?
So, and I've already said this before, but I have to go off on a tangent and go off on a rant. I freaking hated the Odyssey and having to read it. I had to read it in seventh grade, which was probably a terrible time to read it because I didn't understand any of the words. We had like 20 pages of vocabulary tests we had to do on this book because it was all like very high level, highbrow Greek thinking. Like it was just too much for a seventh grader who hated reading at the time. Like it was just not it. And it was written by a man, and it was written by in the thing of like this male hero going through this trek in Odyssey to get home to his beautiful wife and child and stuff like that after coming from war. That did not interest me at all. So I was very hesitant to pick up this book, but this book knocks it out of the park. It is so much better than the Iliad and the Odyssey because it literally brings in unique perspectives. It brings in the gods' perspective. It brings in the sea nymph's perspective. It brings in a female perspective, which is so, so lacking in Greek mythology. Like, I wouldn't say it's lacking in the modern retellings of Greek mythology, like a Percy Jackson series, but having this female protagonist who's a complicated character, who's like this race of a character that we never see in perspective wise in Greek mythology, it is so, so good. Like, that's why I can't give this book enough praise.
I definitely agree. I think it's one of the best, if not the best, adult rethinking of Greek mythology. I think that, like Percy Jackson, authors, it's become a lot more popular now for authors to sort of remake these stories for young audiences. But as far as adult audiences go, I think it's definitely something that's still kind of new. And I loved the feminist lens. She really killed it.
I do want to add, this isn't just the Odyssey. Like, you get the Trojan War, you get, you have Medea in there, you have Daedalus's maze and the Minotaur. And you have the Titans in there. Like, there's a lot more than just that. It's just, like, kind of the climax of Circe's story falls within the realm of the Odyssey. But there's plenty before and after that ties into other major myth stories you may have heard. And I think it's fantastic. I love this retelling and how it ties everything together. And I think it'd be beneficial to read for anyone who likes to know like the timeline of Greek epic poems and Greek myths.
Yeah. Also, just for anyone who's kind of like me, not like a super mythology buff, but sort of really enjoys the stories. And Circe's a nymph because a much more powerful god,
Titan,
Titan procreated with her mother, who's also a nymph.
Yeah, she ends up more of just like a witch.
Yeah, and so it creates this sort of being of sort of middle power, which is a nymph. So they're sort of like the serfs of the magical world, where they're magical and powerful enough that they're, you know, superior and immortal and live longer than humans, but the gods sort of step all over them. But because of that, Circe interacts with a lot of really infamous Greek mythology characters, who you might not expect to make an appearance.
I think the best way to describe it with Greek mythology is nymphs is where you get the term like nymphomaniac and stuff like that. So nymphs are definitely more of this. They're like the foil and the mistress, the dirty mistresses of Greek mythology is the nicest, politest way to say it.
Yes. But that is actually one of my most favorite points in the book is the author sort of takes that idea of a nymph and basically exposes it for being patriarchy and misogyny, because she was like, all of these nymphs were totally powerless, and half these stories are straight up being raped by these other gods and more powerful beings. And the reason that they're known as being promiscuous is because they're actually just the easiest prey to catch. And it was just a huge like mic drop moment in the book for me. And I was like, absolutely, you're absolutely right. Like, from a woman's perspective, you know, nymphs really didn't deserve this reputation.
Well, and it's
when
so
interesting.
You go ahead.
It's interesting too, because she's not quite a nymph, but she kind of is, but she has three siblings that like are never really described as nymphs and get sent out in the world to do great things in the favors of the gods or whatever. And it's really interesting how she kind of doesn't quite fall in any category quite, but just kind of default ends up in the nymph category. And it kind of, that starts her character development, and she like doesn't fit in anywhere quite right.
And I find it so interesting is she's so unique in this book, and that's all kudos to Madeline Miller. And the gods are very, very static. But I've noticed that throughout most mythology is like Zeus is a playboy who always just seems to turn into an animal and has sex with random unassuming women. Like that's just the common theme. Hera always is turning those random unassuming women into animals or other objects because she's mad that her husband's cheating. Like the gods are very static in their nature. And it's always told from this male gaze perspective. And so that's just what makes this so interesting is you see it now from the female perspective, where they're still static beings, but you're seeing them for their very problematic nature.
Yes. But I mean, all that kind of brings us to the question of Circe. You know, we've sort of mentioned her character development in this book is just crazy. I mean, a journey is an understatement. So what did you think of Circe and how did it change throughout the book?
She almost went through an odyssey.
Okay. I mean, she's a woman. She, from start to finish, it's like the lifespan of a woman, except hers is just much longer than the average woman. So her lessons are longer and harder and take a lot more toll on who she becomes. I think she is kind of annoying and whiny at the beginning, but that's because she doesn't know who she is and the people around her treat her like garbage. So she has reason to be kind of whiny. But by the end, she's kind of this like, understands her power, understands what she finally wants in the world, and kind of comes to terms with she no longer like with mortality because she'd rather be mortal.
Absolutely. I mean, same. She's very unlikable at the beginning. She's portrayed as the least powerful, most ugly child of her Titan father and then her, you know, witch nymph mother. And so she's very ignored and pushed aside. But another one of my favorite messages in the book is that Circe is incredibly powerful by the end of the book. And so Madeline Miller is definitely pointing out Circe was never powerless. The only reason she thought she was powerless was because the people around her told her that. And so it's a lot about, you know, self-actualization and being your own person, and these patriarchal values tried to dictate who she was, and her exile is actually what allowed her to find her power. And so my favorite parts of the book are when she's slowly becoming this like witch nymph medicine power, and then, you know, really kind of becomes this force of a woman who ends up literally fighting Athena.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, take a vacation to an island, go meditate. You will be a boss lady.
Go yeah. on a retreat. That's what I'm hearing.
Become a witch. Yeah. She's just so interesting, just because she's a baby at the beginning. Like, her lifespan is so long. Yet in the beginning, we start off at her like birth and her actualization. And she grows up so quickly because time goes by so fast for her. But in the sense of a human mortal life, her at 15 is like her at us at one or two, because it's just so much of a longer lifespan. And the gods are just so different from humans because they see everything, but they have a 30,000 foot perspective on most things. Like, they just don't understand humanity. They don't understand morality because they don't have those necessary human morals and they don't interact. They just kind of drink wine and party. Like, it's very, yeah. It's very surface level. It's very,
and they don't die.
And they don't die. So they don't fear mortality. They don't fear those things. But
when they play with mortals like playthings.
Yeah. And because they are afraid of Cersei's power, she gets secluded to this island, and she doesn't realize totally that that's why. But then that's when she started comes into her power, when she can get away from that toxic environment, and then she can just be like, oh, I am more powerful than them. I can just make up shit and then change the universe.
All right. I mean, I think the origin of her exile is that she uses these flowers to sort of unknowingly cast a spell on this human she'd fallen in love with. And then one of the gods tried, or maybe it was on the girl that he ends up falling in love with, the nymph he ends up liking better than her. But anyway, then the gods or the titans are like, no, that flower's not magical. And Cersei's like, yes, it is. I literally used it. And then they just gaslight her, even though she did use it to create this powerful spell, which is just also a great example of gaslighting and being forced to just march to someone else's tune, even if they're wrong.
And all of her siblings are like, hey, we've been doing this too. But she's the only one that fesses up to dad. So... Mm-hmm. Super unfair. The quite literally golden children of her family keep messing with the mortals with their little magic stuff, and she just goes to think on the island.
Yeah. Well, all that thinking, or maybe just her life experience, made Cersei a lot more compassionate and empathetic to humans. And that really separated her from the gods and even just the other nymphs and titans and everyone that she knew in the immortal world. What did you guys think about the compassion and empathy? Where do you think it came from?
Well, she makes some really morally gray decisions when it comes to humans. So she falls for the fisher boy, turns him into a god, and he ends up being a jerk. So she kind of loses some compassion there. Also, eventually she does fall in love with some humans, but also she does turn some humans into pigs and eat them.
They did deserve it, though.
They deserved it.
She has like a lot love hate kind of back and forth with humans, but ends up kind of envying their mortality because they don't have to live to see everything she's seen and deal with, you know, the politics of the gods, I guess. I don't know. It's very interesting. At first, she's in love with them. Then she's kind of really over them. And then she kind of realizes some are wicked and some are good.
Right. I definitely think the compassion and the empathy partly comes from her just being the rejected weakling of the crew. I feel like she could relate to humans and humans' place in the world compared to the gods, because she felt that way. I do think sort of one of the character arcs that she's taken on is her realizing that no one's really good or bad. That's something that she already understands of the gods, but I think it's something that she only understands towards the end about humans, is that there's good and bad, and kind of accepting it. But yeah, I definitely loved when she was turning everybody into pigs, because you love to see it.
I thought it was so interesting because of her nymph status. She's like in this halfway in between gray area between god and human. Humans think she's a god. Gods think she's trash. So therefore, she sees the honesty of the gods. But she also gets to see the differences of the humans, because the humans do treat her like a god in a sense. But because of her abilities and her power, she also sees the negatives of humans. So she kind of sees the truth of both sides by the end of this. And so she gets a very nuanced and very well-informed perspective of both sides of this coin. And I think that's where she gets compassion, and she's just like, well, you're not any better than humans. You're just more powerful to the gods. Of like, right. You might be worse than the humans, but you just have this power and they don't. And so they have this sense of morality and the sense of fearing of mortality. Unlike y'all, who just fuck around and never find out.
I think also, like, because she falls between this dichotomy of human and god, and because she's like learning more about good and evil, she kind of figures out that she can do both good and evil things as long as she's willing to reap the consequences, which I feel like most characters and most real life people never come to terms with, like, good and bad can exist in one person.
An inherent part of this journey is there are some really tough scenes in this book, specifically, trigger warning, we probably should have said this at the beginning, there is a brutal rape of Cersei in the book. What did you guys think of those parts?
Honestly, not surprised. I feel like you expect it, especially in some of these Greek myths. You know, a lot of heroes are born from mothers who did not care to be impregnated. And unfortunately, like, it wasn't a surprise, but it did surprise her. So it was kind of a turning point for her to be like, wait, not all humans are innocent. Not everyone is coming to my island for help. And men rule the world. And they, when they realize she's there alone without a man to protect her, they take advantage of her, and she doesn't let it happen again.
Yeah, I really like those comments, Caitlin. I found it very realistic. I think it's realistic in general, but especially for the Greek mythology world, when there is honestly so much sexual assault, and so many beings that have these just, you know, grossly imbalanced power dynamics. I think what I liked about it, you know, obviously I didn't like that it happened, but I liked that it was still always about Cersei, and it was about her story and how things impacted her. There's so many problematic ways that we talk about and portray sexual assault in media. And I think this is a good example of it being productive. You know, it's about the survivor. It's about how it impacted Cersei and the wrongdoing of the people who did it, instead of it being, you know, the hero's love interest is assaulted, and now he gets his call to action from her being violated. And oh, we're going to watch this really gratuitous scene that is honestly really eroticized, and that's disgusting, or any of those other things that we tend to see a lot. So,
yeah. Right. There's no white knight coming to rescue her from her island. She's there on her own, and she is her own hero.
Yeah. And I think it's so interesting is that in the Greek mythology, because it's predominantly written by men, and I sound like a broken record, there's a sense of eroticization of these Zeus is a man whore who just is so sexy and gets all these girls. But then like you read into the myths a little bit more. It's like, oh no, he flat out raped that girl. Like, oh no, he is sexually assaulting a bunch of women because he has this strong power dynamic where he's the most powerful being in this situation. And it's very like either male centric or just like third person centric, where you just, you're reading it as it, this happened, this thing happened. You don't read it from a perspective of someone who's it's happening to. Mm-hmm. It's very much read as like, oh, well this happened, but then Achilles is born from it, so it's okay. Or this happened and Perseus was born from it, so it's okay. And it's like, what if it's just not okay? What if we just take the perspective of the woman in this position that was placed in this terrible, awful position and think about it as 21st century people and say, maybe we can change our, flip our perspectives on this. Maybe we can think about this as civilized people now.
Well, in general, like Greek myths would have you believe that the Greeks were having one big old orgy in over Greece because Greek myths, you know, they do it with their mom. They eat their kids. They do it with a cow. Like, yeah, there's some really messed up stuff in Greek myths. So it kind of makes, unfortunately, this kind of sexual assault look pretty commonplace compared to some of the crazier things that happen in the Greek myths. So, like, that's why it's not all that surprising that it takes place here. But I agree with everything Catherine just said to the point of that.
And that's required reading, but this isn't. So let's make this required reading.
So true.
So Circe just figures out that like her unique power is witchcraft, and her siblings have figured this out also. But why this, I think they call it pharmakai. It's kind of like pharmacy mixing drugs, but for witchcraft. Anyway, it makes her a bit dangerous and a bit feared. Why do you think Madeline Miller chose the word witchcraft to describe this power? I feel like you don't hear witches in Greek mythology stories that often, but Circe is a witch.
Not at all. I have never heard the word witchcraft in Greek mythology. I heard like oracle and seer and other things, but I think witchcraft is an entirely more modern approach to it in the sense of like Western and Salem. And you think witchcraft, you think of like these ladies are conspiring against these men to take over their minds and control them. And like you think of the hag, and you think of, there's very stereotypical ideas of witchcraft. And I think that's what, that was the intention that Madeline Miller had, is like, I'm going to use the word witchcraft because we need to reclaim this word, and we need to say, you know what? It's a good thing to have witchcraft. It's not this like thing that'd be burned at the stake for anymore. And I think it was a very intentional use of that word to describe Circe's power.
Yeah, it definitely, it struck me as very feminized. I mean, when we think of witches, we think of women, and that's, you know, a magical power that is just very typically feminine. And so that's just what it made me think of maybe sort of refocusing the idea of power and magical power to women.
I think it also just gives us a starting point as a reader to understand her, because we have basic Western background knowledge of witches make potions and cast spells, and like she's doing these things. It's just in a different time period and context, so it gives us a starting point to like not have to totally educate us on what she's doing, but then can evolve that from there.
A part of Circe's long life, sort of a lot of the ending action comes from the fact that Circe has a child. What did you think about her becoming a mother and then having a relationship with the wife of the father of her child and her child?
I thought it was interesting. I guess I kind of saw it coming when they kept saying like, Odysseus is going to come to your island, like that they were going to have a relationship. And I do remember from the Greek myth is that he like stayed there for a very extended amount of time because she was like this alluring nymph, from what I remember of the book I hated. So I knew that there was going to be some sort of interaction between the two of them. I didn't realize that she would have a child. I think that's totally Madeline Miller's purview on that. And I think it makes sense from her story development. I loved that she had a relationship with Odysseus's wife, Penelope, post their children meeting. Because Odysseus deserved very much the way he died, I think. Maybe that's a hot take. And I really love that these two powerful women that were relegated to very side character roles in the Odyssey were getting this full, unique, and complex character roles besides just these pretty women that Odysseus met along the way.
I was really happy that she got a love story that almost worked out, but then the real love story ended up being her and her child. And that was really nice to see and to, like, you know, kids grow up, kids leave, kids see glory. And so that kind of gave you the heartbreak of, like, that was her being a mother, sending your kid off into the world. And, like, women experience that. And that was her love, you know, was her kid. It got really weird, though, when she ended up hooking up with her former lover's other child that was also the son of the lady she's now, like, living on an island with. I don't know. That got real weird. And then it's kind of ends. And you're like, oh, okay. But, like, she wants to be mortal and live a, like, mortal love life with him, no matter how weird the circumstances are. So you're kind of happy for her because she tries and tries and tries to get the love story she wants. And then she ends up getting it.
Yeah. I mean, it was that ending part where I was like, this is really Greek mythology now.
Yeah, I was like, there it is. Not quite the Oedipus complex, but it got weird.
Hey, they're not related. It's okay.
Right. Not quite, but Buddy had mommy issues.
Yeah. Almost incest is the sweet spot.
Close, but not quite. Yeah. Still legal.
Yeah. Weird, but anyway. But okay, so I agree. I loved when Cersei became a mother because it was completely her decision. It was something she decided she wanted to do, she valued, and she really, I loved watching her sort of nurture her child and defend him and become this, you know, she'd already become a powerful individual and now she was a powerful mother. And I also loved her relationship with Penelope, even though the whole time I was on the edge of my seat waiting for them to try to murder Cersei or something. I was glad that it all worked out.
It's two women just coming together with their power. Like, it's not them being pitted against each other. I appreciate it.
Yeah, I like that motherhood is hard for her. She's come into her power. She's this badass witch controlling whatever she wants. But then the one, like, her weakness is a toddler. And I'm like, how many women is that true for? That's a real depiction of womanhood. And then her friendship with Penelope is really just two tired, empty nesters betrayed by the same dude. They're like, girl, I am tired. Let's be tired together. Like, it's just so real. And I love it.
That is the perfect description.
It really is. It's like, how is a book about this 1,000-year-old nymph actually pure womanhood? Like, so relatable to so many people, just actual reality.
Yeah. And to say, I don't know what motherhood is like, obviously, but I love, this was the first depiction of motherhood that I actually, like, loved and loved the idea of, because motherhood is hard, if my mother has anything to say about it.
And she's a lady living alone with a pet cat for a while, so
woo, that.
So that kind of brings us to the ending. Caitlin, you mentioned it. She finally gets the love story with humans that she wanted, and she becomes, quote unquote, her true self and makes herself mortal. What did you think of the ending? Was it happy? Was it sad? Was it both? Where did you land?
I was just all in my feels.
I had so many emotions.
It was mostly happy because, like, who wants to live a life so long you see everyone you love die before you?
That's what I thought it was happy. And I really liked that she did finally get this ending. She was finally treated well by someone. You were really wanting the happy ending for her. It was just so emotional, though, because you've just experienced so much with her now. I felt like I had just, like, I loved her. I was like, she's my best friend and maybe my mom or something. Like, I don't know. I love you, Cersei. And then you just have to kind of say goodbye. Like, the ending is very tied every string. You know, it's very finished and very final. And so I just felt so much.
It's very, like, sail off into the sunset, so you're happy, but you don't want to see him go.
It's yes. quite literally that, because they really just look at to a sunset on her island as, like, people sail off. Like, it's very idyllic in the sense of, like, she does get a happy ending with a man that you think will actually treat her right and, like, understands both her and humans. Like, it's a very, for Odysseus's son, he's a very well-informed dude.
And she's taught other women how to be powerful and witchy, so, like, it's like,
yeah, I love that.
Absolutely. All right, well, there you have it. Do you guys have any suggestions that are not the Percy Jackson series?
I do have a suggestion that I'm very proud of. So I can't remember if I've recommended this before or not. I probably have. But it's called The Silence of the Girls by Pat Barker. And it is very similar Greek mythology retelling. When Achilles is on his way to Troy, the story in Silence of the Girls is told from the perspective of one of the women who was the queen of that city and now becomes his slave. Anyway, so it's the same idea. It's a Greek mythology retold from a previously neglected viewpoint. It is really, really good. It's slow-paced, introspective, but deeply impactful. And Pat Barker has several other books about Greek mythology that are also like that. So
I have an also unique one to recommend. I read it because it was kind of popular for a while on Goodreads. It's called Lore by Alexandra Bracken. And it's kind of like Percy Jackson meets Hunger Games. It's pretty, like, kind of dark, but, like, the premise is there are descendants of the gods, of the Greek heroes, not of the gods, descendants of the Greek heroes living in, like, modern day world. And the heroes are trying to still defeat the gods. The gods are, like, doomed to walk the earth as mortals every 7 years. And if one of these, like, demigod descendants can kill them, they can claim their, like, godly power. And they, like, there's a lot of intrigue, and the, like, main character is the last one in her line, and, like, all this stuff happens. Anyways, I feel like Greek myths, but want to modernize it and want, like, an adult Percy Jackson. It's an interesting one. It's, like, a standalone, and I thought it was a really interesting take on modernizing history.
That sounds fascinating.
I do not have any suggestions, because my only suggestion is Percy Jackson, and you told me I couldn't do that. So
just say read Song of Achilles.
Yeah, I like it so far. I like Song of Achilles so far. If you like romance books, I guess Hades and Persephone is a good romance book. I mean, like, it's just classic romance. It's not highbrow like this book. Like, it's not feminist literature. It's more romance novel. So, different vibe.
In case you haven't heard this entire episode, Catherine highly recommends The Odyssey.
God, if there's one thing you need to take out of this episode, do not read The Odyssey, and school districts should no longer require this book, because it is insane how stupid this book is.
These are our opinions. You don't have to agree. If you don't, hit us up. Let us know why. We're interested. You can do that on our social media, which are all pretty much Busy Girls Pod, and rate and review our podcast.
And if you have other cool mythology retellings, even outside of the Greek realm, that you think we should read, let us know, because Catherine and I are big mythology nerds. So,
yes, Caitlin and I are huge nerds who just love all the myths. So please let us know. Even though we have a few episodes lined up, we will definitely get to your suggestions. We already have a few coming up. So with that, I'm Catherine.
I'm Caitlin.
And I'm Casey. Thanks for listening. And when you get a chance, take a break with the Busy Girls Book Club.